Before I go on about my stories, I'd like to pause for a beat to ask you a few possibly leading questions about life in general. Do you ever feel like you're playing some sort of game? If so, are you winning? Are you losing? Are you even keeping score? Is anyone? Do you know the rules of this game? What's the difference between the meaningful and the absurd? It's getting harder to tell, isn't it? What would you change if you knew the answers? In the end, aren't we all just playing? Do with it as you please, of course, but while in the game, paying close attention to the odd and the small moments might just give us a thing or two to laugh about before we die.
I'm going to tell you a couple stories about a few old people who I knew when I was a boy. I'm telling these stories for a number of reasons. Most of them are probably selfish, I'd guess. But there is hope. Telling them may inspire you to tell me some of your stories. If you're into it, maybe hit pause and write down how you feel about this weird game or test or whatever it is you perceive is happening to you in life. Maybe tell me a story about yourself or someone you love. And once you've got that story where you want it, feel free to send it to me so I can read it and not feel like such a schmuck for putting you through what I'm about to put you through. Into the awkward void, we leap. First, let's travel back to the 1980s to visit my father's father, my grandpa, Ernest Cletus Couch. No shit, that's his real name, Ernest Cletus Couch. They called him Rockin' Ern. I have performed at least one bodily function on and embarrassed myself completely in front of entirely too many members of my family. Mercifully, somehow, I've managed to limit those to just piss and vomit. And I haven't vomited or pissed on anyone in over 20 years. Other embarrassments, however, have not been so restrained by type or time. I feel like I should be much more horrified and or humiliated by myself, but honestly, I'm not for some reason. Here's hoping this helps you feel the same liberty from your own shameful behavior. Since I was very young, I've been a fan of hanging around with what my peers called old people. I really liked my uncles. Spending time with my mom's mom was delightful. I don't have any memories of my mom's father, and my father's parents weren't very well and not alive for long once I came around. But I do remember meeting my dad's dad. As a matter of fact, that meeting is among my earliest memories. My folks piled my brother, my two older sisters, and I into the back of a car and pointed that thing to the frozen north. We lived in Mississippi, and my grandfather was in a nursing home in Flint, Michigan. I can't remember much about our drive up there, honestly. I think I was about 4 years old. For all I know, we got along just fine, and no one gave anyone else any shit. It seems pretty unlikely, though.
I get along without you very well. Of course I do.
Everyone in that car, with the exception of me and my big sister, were pretty likely to fight with each other. My mom and dad fought just as much and as bitterly as my brother and oldest sister did. And my oldest sister did and still does fight with just about anyone.
Sheltered in your arms, of course I do. But I get along without you very well.
While I can't recall anything too specific about that ride, I do remember having always been an eavesdropper of exceptional skill. At least, that's what I tell myself. Dropping my eaves in that car wasn't hard, and I listened intently as Mom and Pop talked about Grandpa like no one was listening. The general consensus? He was sick, and he was dying, and he wouldn't be around much longer. At that point in my life, my concept of death was loosely built around having seen insects and fish killed around me, a type of death which is fairly sudden. I remember being extremely curious about what sick and dying might look like. The many hours of detail lost to time, much like a great deal of the landscape between North Mississippi and Flint, Michigan, I assume are boring and not worth the space in my brain.
Should I phone once more? No, it's best that I stick to my tune. I get along without you very well.
My next memory from this episode is of approaching my grandfather as he ate his breakfast at a table in a large room with lots of old people in wheelchairs. I've been told that a person can't remember smells. I disagree. The smell of that place was unforgettable. The air was thick with the old factory evidence of urine and disinfectant locked in a forever war. I remember lots of people wearing white. In fact, the whole place in my memory was white. Bright white walls, off-white tables, drab white clothing, dingy white plates, and a flat white tile floor. The high-pitched smell of piss and cleaning products were somewhat undercut by the warm, rounded, and entirely delightful and familiar smell of toast. When we met up with my grandpa, he was eating some of that toast. I've always loved the way butter and jelly mix together on top of a piece of hot and crispy bread. The resulting color is a creamy butter yellow, and also a little bit white, halted mid-melt by cold strawberry red jelly flecked with tiny black seeds and swirled around by a knife's edge into eddies and pools of tasty goodness on top of the crispy slice. The sound of a knife spreading across toasted bread can honestly be one of my favorite instruments. In fact, I'd like to form a band of percussion instruments played by people eating breakfast. I can hear the melodies and beats in my mind right now. My bandmates brushing their fingers rhythmically on nylon jackets and working the zippers, crazily buttering freshly toasted bread to hold down the time, egg cracking and clinking coffee cups could harmonize with the wild jacket work, and the occasional dragging of a chair across the floor for emphasis, We'd write lyrics in the themes of chaos chasing hunger and hunger chasing chaos. Chip, burnt toast, and the buttermilk's coming to a diner near you. Sorry. Okay, so we approached my grandpa mid-breakfast. I don't know exactly what I was expecting from a sick and dying man, but what I saw as the adults and older kids around me were talking with old granddad was honestly something I experienced all the time. I looked into his face when he was speaking. He was taking bites and munching while listening to questions and answering with his cheeks still stuffed with toast. I noticed something entirely familiar and comforting in his face. Although it was deeply wrinkled and his eyes seemed small and not entirely open, in the folds of his mouth where his lips met his cheeks, little puddles of that glorious combination of butter, jelly, and tiny toast crumbs were forming between the bites and chatting. I thought to myself, I always have butter and jelly in my face when I eat toast. My mom made me wipe it off before I left the table. And while I don't know what being sick and dying meant, I knew how I felt. I felt great. I wasn't sick, and I wasn't dying, so how could he be dying? Twinned in, 'cause I locked myself outside again. Between being distracted by my granddad, so engaged and happy and colorful munching, and occasionally looking around curiously at the whiteness and wheelchairiness of it all, while trying to convince my nose to smell more toast than piss, and then thinking about what dying really meant, I was totally lost in thought. I was popped out of my little world of numbskull ponderings by my dad, who said, "Well, say hi, Andrew." I looked into his eyes and reached out to shake his wrinkly and sticky hand. I said the only thing that could possibly come out of my mouth at that moment. "Hey, you don't look like you're gonna die to me." With my own small and perpetually sticky hand still in his grasp, he took his intense yet somehow foggy gaze and landed it with a sideways glance on me. Now who told you I was dying? A childlike grin squeezed a little jelly butter swirl out of socket, and as it dropped to his lap, he shifted his sarcastic gaze to my father and said, "Well, we know this one ain't the milkman's." And that's how it started for me. I fell in love with old people. They just didn't give a fuck. And I was hooked on that notion. Be yourself, say what you want, eat like you mean it. My grandfather died shortly after that, and I never saw him alive again. I no longer trust in toast crumbs or jelly streaks as benchmarks for good health. Fast forward now to a 9-year-old version of me. I was raised Catholic, and it was time for me to experience my first communion. In the life of a Catholic, that's kind of a big deal. I'll explain this as briefly as possible for those of you who don't know much about the Catholic faith. In Catholic ceremonies of worship, a priest says an ancient incantation over a pile of thin and flavorless crackers and a goblet of bad wine, and thusly transmutes the little snack into the actual flesh and blood of Jesus Christ. This is then doled out by the priest for the gathered to eat and drink of Jesus' flesh so that we, Catholic man-eaters, may live. It may sound like I'm joking, but that's it. I'm not joking. As a little guy, I thought about it, and although it was creepy to consider, I was into it. Mostly, however, my enthusiasm at that point in time was a result of the time of year. My first communion was in the spring, and spring was, and still is, frankly, when shit gets interesting for me. First of all, I was born on May 1st. Shortly after my birthday, the school year would end, and the delights of fucking around all summer, free to pursue my own interests, were near. Added to this, I knew the combination of my sister's birthday, April 11th, my own birthday, and the celebration of my first communion would bring my grandma, my mom's mom, down for a visit. I loved seeing her. She was sweet and a bit strange, but overall, she was a very calming presence for me. She brought her sister with her on that visit, my great Aunt Jeannie. My room was offered up to Aunt Jeannie, and I was relegated to the living room to sleep on the hide-a-bed with my grandma. I was excited, but a bit nervous. To be honest, I was a bedwetter until pretty late in the game. Sharing a bed with someone else was an anxiety-inducing proposition, to say the least. But somehow, sleeping with my grandma didn't seem so bad. She was so understanding and sweet about everything. I felt like I could handle it. Yeah, right. Another thing which accompanies springtime in the southern U.S. are barbecue festivals. My dad was part of a team of guys who would set up a booth at some of these festivals and make slow smoke barbecue. There was a carnival atmosphere at these things, with small rides, games, and all sorts of craziness for kids to just go nuts. There happened to be a festival directly across the street from our church on the day of my first communion, and my dad's group of friends, the Secret Squadron as they were called, had a booth and would be cooking all day and night. All decked out in my little suit, nearly innocent, totally smiling, I was marched up the aisle of the church to take my first bites and sips from the Holy Corpus. It was something of a perfect display of the tiny and faithful. I took the cracker. I drank a small sip of the wine and made my way back to my seat without falling over, farting, or fucking up in any way. Relieved to have it all over, I ran across the street with my sister and our friends. I was hungry and I knew there would be loads of food at my dad's booth.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right, Mama. Any way you do. Well, Mama, she done told me. Papa done told me too. Son, that gal you fooling wish she ain't.
Plates of pulled pork piled high, next to hand-cut french fries with little fried crispy onions on top, ketchup and barbecue sauce and tasty puddles next to coleslaw, all washed down with ice-cold Coca-Cola. I was out of my fucking mind eating plate after plate. Before I go any further, it's important that you remember this was the 1980s, and parenting was a shade different then. For instance, a parent could drink heavily and socialize. Other kids wandered around a carnival filled with town-to-town drifters, barking out the rules of crazy games and invitations to jump in line for dangerous rides. Rides which had been hastily assembled by people on a bouquet of stimulants and depressants. And still, those people would be considered good parents. My genuinely good parents, divorced and remarried as they were both drinking and socializing, so we were free to go wild. A popular cocktail at that time was rum and coke. I wasn't able to mix my own, of course, but all the cups were red, filled with ice, and at least enough coke to turn the liquid a dark brown. So, for a curious young man recently snacked on the flesh and blood of a deity, to sneak a long pull from one of these cocktails could be done without raising the suspicion of any nearby adults. It didn't hurt that I was also wearing a little suit and tie. Being an already rambunctious child, it was difficult for those increasingly inebriated adults to notice the warm buzz of intoxication creeping upon the consciousness of a young, aspiring Catholic. As the day turned to night, and I'd been steadily drinking long sips of strong cocktails, eating multiple plates of barbecue, and spinning around on dangerous carnival rides, a few of my dad's buddies, laughing at the crazy little guy in the suit at their feet, handed me a beer and a cigar. I took a long pull on that beer, a short-lived drag on the cigar, and chased the whole thing down with a coughing fit, rivaled in intensity only by the rollicking laughter of the adults who watched it happen. Exhausted from the long day and definitely pretty drunk, I got in the van with my family and was likely asleep before we drove out of the church parking lot. I don't remember getting into bed with my grandma, but I do remember waking up to the unforgettable sensation of the whole house spinning uncontrollably, no matter how hard I closed my eyes. The gentle snoring of my grandma, which normally was kind of comforting, was making me panic. I turned to her. She was sleeping peacefully on her side, with her back to me. I mustered up the courage to wake her and tell her I was going to be sick, slowly trying not to upset the apple cart of my tenuous grip on the spinning house. I placed my hand on her shoulder and said, "Grandma." I heard the low rumbling of a snore cut short as she woke up slowly. "Grandma," I said again, but before I could speak another word, my grip on that spinning house was broken and an uncontrollable torrent of hot vomit burst from my mouth. I filled the space between her sweet back and the thin mattress of the Haida bed with an acidic, steamy mix of candy, french fries, barbecue, coleslaw, rum and coke, beer, and of course, the body and blood of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. My days as a Catholic were doomed from that point forward. Always the nurse and the nurturing mother, my grandma helped me out of that wild moment. Sweating, vomiting, crying, and apologizing drunkenly, her only, even slightly negative comment, "It smells like beer," landed more like a pat on the shoulder than a punch in the arm it was meant to be. Before putting us to bed at night, my grandmother always insisted that we wash our hands. I remember taking our hands in hers as she stood behind us at the sink. Warm water, a bar of fragrant soap, and her delightful and soft hands would massage the soap into our sticky biscuit hooks as she hummed and sang a little tune to wash up. Oh, me, oh, me, oh, me, oh, me, oh, me. This same woman, agreeable and calm, in spite of being ripped from her slumber by a drunken and barfing 9-year-old, with vomit actively cooling on the back of her pajamas, maintained her dignity, serenity, and overall splendid demeanor. She cleaned me up, put me on the toilet with a wastebasket in front of me, while she changed the sheets of the bed, washed herself up, and put on a clean shirt. She took me back to the hide of bed, put the wastebasket next to my side of the bed, and kissed my sweaty forehead and said, "If you need to puke again, please aim for the trash can."
Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my eyes are wide open. Oh, my lover, for the first time in my life, my eyes can see.
Duly swayed by grandparents, both of them so different in temperament and amplified in their own ways by my equally dissimilar parents, I can feel them somewhere in my consciousness, bickering occasionally for control over the wheel. Phases, stages, memory, influence, blowing across us like a crazy wind. Our behavior and movement responding to those breezes like blades of grass, recording the wind and forgetting it. Over and over.
Pause. Did he jump or did he fall as he gazed into the maw of the morning mist? Did he raise both fists and say to hell with this jest? Let the rock roll. Let it roll, let it crash down low. There's a house down there, but I lost it long ago.
Down there, but I lost it long ago. I'm letting it roll away. It's got nothing to do with fate and everything to do with. Peered into the mist, a stone stole from a precipice, Paul.